You should put salt on your tortilla chips at dinner, not your field when you're irrigating. HSI water uses sulfurous acid to neutralize bicarbonates, lower soil pH, and flush salts from the root zone. Cleaner water, healthier soil, less buildup in your lines. Producers who get their irrigation water dialed in see better nutrient uptake, improved infiltration, and reduced fertilizer costs season after season. Getting your water right is one of the highest return investments on the farm. Our specialists will work with you to design the right system for your needs. No guesswork, just a clear picture of your water chemistry and a plan that fits your operation. So, is your water working for you or against you? Find out at hsiwater.com.
Text SALTY, that's S-A-L-T-Y, to 979-232-2528.
Hello, friends. This is Tillery Timmons-Sims back again with you for another episode of Conservation Stories. Conservation Stories is brought to you by the Sand Hill Area Research Association, and I am so excited, as always. We have the most amazing guest. Today we have Mark Funderburk with us, and Mark is with UMC. Not just with UMC, he is UMC. I don't know if that's exactly how you would give yourself, you would title
yourself.
That's
quite all right. That's quite all right. I'm privileged to be here. I'm the president and CEO of UMC. I've been there for almost 35 years, and I've been CEO for about 9 years.
Yeah. I read an article, an interview on the Baptist Standard.
Oh,
they
yes.
interviewed you. That was
that
really
was a while back.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, that was really good.
It's, I appreciate that. It was a pleasure to do that as well.
Yeah. So we were reminiscing a while ago. So you you married a Brownfield girl.
I did. I married Cynthia Noble from Brownfield, who you know her family. And yes, and so we both met at Baylor.
Okay.
Back in the day.
I wondered about that.
Back in the day, we met at Baylor. I'm from Louisiana. She's from Brownfield. Met at Baylor. And then we ended up, over the course of the next 3 or 4 years, we ended up in Brownfield for a couple of years.
What were you doing there?
Well, her dad, Bill. And his brother, Bob. Yes, you know them. They had an insurance agency, and Bill was a real estate appraiser. And I was in the insurance business in Dallas. And so I moved to Brownfield to kind of work with him in real estate appraisal. And then Cynthia and I both decided we wanted to go to Tech to get our master's.
Okay.
And I was contemplating, she did hers first, and then I decided to get mine. And I wanted an MBA, and I was really discovering what I wanted to invest my time in or what would be best for me. And about that time, lo and behold, much to my surprise, I was diagnosed with cancer.
Oh my
and
goodness.
I was a young man.
Yeah.
I didn't have children yet. And so went through treatment and surgery and drug therapy and all that. And I'm fine, of course. I was fine, you know, as a young man. But it led me to realize healthcare is my place.
Oh,
healthcare
wow.
is my calling. I never looked back. It led me to UMC as a fellow or an intern, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I've been there ever
you
since.
You've been there, yeah. So you started, as, you've been all the way up from the bottom
all the way
up. As an
intern who didn't know anything to the CEO who knows a little bit more.
Oh,
maybe not much,
wow.
but a little bit more. So it's been a great, great place for me. And we've loved being in Lubbock and raising family here. So it's been nice.
That is really, really neat. And you got a son.
We have a son who lives in North Carolina with his fiance and
oh, wow.
So we're looking forward to a wedding next year.
Oh, that changes
yeah.
a lot of things.
It does. So we're very blessed.
Yeah, that's really great. Well, it's really nice to have somebody that, you know, is long-term committed, you know, and explains mm-hmm. a lot about the commitment UMC has to the community and
absolutely.
The region.
Absolutely. We yeah. are very mission-minded. The mission of UMC has not changed since it started in 1978. We're almost 50 years,
wow.
which is pretty amazing.
Wow.
And so our mission is really about the people of Lubbock County and beyond, charity, of course. We mm-hmm. don't turn people away. We are
right.
a charitable organization. And then, man, our partner with Texas Tech is so incredible. We train tomorrow's healthcare professionals, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as a conservator, we want to make sure we conserve healthcare here.
Mm-hmm.
So if you train them here, some of them will stay here. That's
mm-hmm.
the great mm-hmm. thing about being an academic medical center.
Yeah.
And then lastly, we've got to have stewardship Some would call it financial prosperity. I'm going to call it stewardship.
Yes.
We've got to have that, because if we don't, we really can't continue this pretty expensive mission.
No, it's so true. And I mean, we talk a lot in sustainability in terms of sustainability.
Right.
So, you know what we've, I think what people, and truly the way then, like what you would think of as the environmental movement, started with only one singular goal in mind, which was, how do we save X? How do we save this?
Right.
How do we save this species? Or which are you know, good goals, but often at the expense of other things, which means it's not sustainable.
Right.
It can't be sustained. Right. And so we take that triple bottom line model where it's, you know, if it impacts people and the planet,
yes,
you know, and profits
and prosperity,
right? That Venn diagram. So where all that's, then that is where the word sustainability becomes something of meaning.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that means a great deal to us as well. If I don't have, as much as I love Lubbock, not everybody wants to be here, you know, to move here, maybe out of medical school or something. And so, man, if we don't have the talent, the people that want that kind of vision and want to be a part of our mission for healthcare, then we really have a problem.
Yeah.
So it's our job to create a sustainable culture. I can put it that way.
Yeah.
A sustainable culture at UMC Health System, to where people want to be there. They want to give of their heart and soul and their hands to the patients we serve, and do that year over year, decade over decade. That's what builds trust, right, in an organization. So we've got to be sustainable. And that always starts with talent first, because talented people always have an option.
Right. Well, and you know, it also overlaps, because people, you know, there's study after study that shows that the environment people live in, it impacts.
Absolutely.
It has a complete, I mean, really correlates to their health. And but also, people don't want to stay somewhere that's miserable.
That's right.
You know, and that's why, you know, I worry some about, like, we're not building green spaces out here.
Right.
We have 8 parks and recs maintenance workers for Lubbock. You know, and these things are, you know, it just never has been a priority for our area. They're harder to maintain here than they are in other places.
And you see that in your neighborhoods, et cetera.
Yes.
You know, that whether it's a green space or an internal space, people want to feel like they have a safe space, even a space to get away. In fact, in the hospital, we have what we call replenishment lounges, because I can be honest with you, since 2020, when COVID started, and then it evaporated a bit, not totally, but a bit, the expectations of people are different, and the mindset and mental health needs of people are totally different. And I don't mean just Gen Zs versus millennial versus me, a baby boomer. I mean, really, people that are working in healthcare today, they've got to feel like they have, somebody has their back.
Yeah.
That the place is safe, and what you want to do, and this doesn't, I don't mean to make this sound very lighthearted, but you really want to bring joy in the workplace. You must.
Yeah.
To keep people and to keep them resolute for the work at hand, you must bring joy in the workplace. And you've got to drive out whatever misery might be there. And so we have replenishment lounges, and we have full-time counselors that do nothing but have open office hours for our employees, because COVID cast a shadow on the healthcare environment, and that shadow remains for some.
Yeah.
And so we've got to be there to make sure they're resilient and their mental well-being, which I was concerned about before COVID, but now it's a whole different priority. If you don't focus on that in a real tangible, invested way, I think your employees will perhaps just not be able to give you that that last bit of discretionary energy that sometimes you have to have.
Yes. You know, it's interesting, because I think COVID brought about changes because people kind of aren't willing to necessarily just give all to the man.
That's right.
They're not going to do that anymore.
That's not. There's really a a work-life balance.
Yes.
Which is some for some non-negotiable.
Yes.
And for a baby boomer, I'm like, you know, you work to get the work done. And life balance means you retire one day. That's right. Kind of my life balance.
Yeah.
No, that's different now, and we have to acknowledge that.
It is.
And so the workplace, I don't consider myself now just the CEO or president. You're now really the nurturer and the sustainer, and you've got to perhaps, even if their life is not what they want at home, you've got to make sure you're bringing joy in the workplace at work.
Right. The work Lots then of, work is a safe place.
Yes, and there's got to be a lot of well-heeled training and gratitude. In fact, just this week, literally just this week, this is not by accident, we had a speaker come in, which we do frequently, and this speaker's name was Zach Mercurio, and he wrote a book called The Joy of Mattering. Mattering. Now, mattering is a word that you didn't hear maybe 20 years ago.
Right.
But now, mattering is a word.
Well, language always evolves.
And it evolves. It is, and the word mattering means, do I feel a actual connection? Your job may matter, but do you feel like you matter in it? And that's the question he had for us this week. And so, as we begin to further align ourselves with a positive, strong culture environment, the narrative is changing and the words are changing, and we've got to get on board with those.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting evolution. Yeah.
But I think it's a good one, though.
I agree.
You know, I asked my husband the other day, I was like, who did decide we were supposed to work 40 hours a week? I mean, I've never thought about like that we have a whole structure that's built out of from decades ago.
Right.
And it came out of what's not best for my employees, but what's best for my corporation, what's best for the bottom line.
And the outputs that you're desiring.
Exactly, right. Yeah, I remember I have a favorite preacher. He passed away from cancer a few years ago, Tim Keller. He's a New York preacher. And he talks about a lot about, you know, how when we try to maximize profits at the expense of everything else, you know, he's like, maybe it's not maximizing profits.
Right.
And if we don't, and that might mean we pay our employees more and maybe our product costs less, you know, but which is a completely foreign idea.
It is.
In our world.
And especially perhaps in healthcare, and this is just the way it is, if you're in a for-profit or somebody else is governing your outputs and the expectations, gratefully, thank God, we are a community hospital, a public hospital. Yes, we're responsible to our county, but I'm awfully glad to say we've never, ever had a layoff, and we've just been really able to, if I can put it this way, use the culture for the benefit of the patients. So patients and employees feel like this is a good place to work. Mm-hmm. It's a good place to receive care. Mm-hmm. And out of that grows good outcomes, right? Yeah. Good quality, good outcomes.
Right.
And then loyalty and trust and all those things that every business really wants. But it's awfully hard to sometimes solidify all that.
Yeah, that's, I think that this whole idea of how we work and the morality that we've attached to our work and our work ethic is, I think, really deep rooted, especially like, in more older generations.
Yes.
And it's not as linked to, you know, and it may just be this, you know, kind of a, how you kind of swing the pendulum swings, but definitely I see younger generations like, their moral compass is not, it doesn't, the sun is not work.
Right, exactly. It's not quite as traditionally based.
What
mom and dad did is not perhaps as attractive.
Right.
And so, the workplace has to then be a lot of things other than just work.
Yeah.
It's got to be a place of joy and a place of safety and a place of training and gratitude.
Yeah.
You would be surprised, maybe you're not, when I do studies on the workplace today and what it means to keep our employees engaged, there is a lot written on the power of gratitude, scientific power of retaining engaged employees based on how much gratitude they feel and hear in the workplace. Mm-hmm. Now, my mom would have said, that's just a nice thing to do. That's just good manners.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
say
right.
thank you.
Yes.
Well, now gratitude is scientifically proven if it's given appropriately with a reason and it's tied to something bigger than they are, perhaps.
Right.
And so they can connect the dots between mm-hmm. your work and the output of your work.
Right.
Then gratitude just has an enormous value and it's free. You know what I mean? It's not, it just, but it has to be practiced.
Right.
And it's
but
a kind
it takes
of
the knowing.
It takes a knowing of what's happening
right.
around you.
But gratitude shows that they're mattering.
Absolutely, 100%. And it puts those words into practice.
Yeah, that's so
And so,
interesting.
Again, COVID opened our eyes to all of this.
Yeah.
Not to mention the fact that after COVID, we then had a ransomware attack, you know, a couple of years ago.
Oh, my gosh, right.
And then just, last year, we were at the epicenter of the measles outbreak.
Yes.
So it's really not been anything but one opportunity after another to prove that what we think we know is actually working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so interesting. I think that as we look at rural West Texas, so I'm not sure how many people that live in Lubbock are aware of how impacted their day-to-day life is by the people that don't live in Lubbock.
Oh, yes.
That the places that we eat and shop are making decisions based on the people you get mad at in the loop because they don't turn on their blinker they don't turn it on.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly
right. You know, like it's the folks that are coming from outside of Lubbock have a huge impact, and what happens in their communities really does impact us.
Yes.
And, you know, how do you see that connection that you guys, I mean, you obviously have a vision for more than.
Oh, mercy, yes.
And I see that at UMC. So similar to, I was in Amarillo, this was several years ago, and the mayor then said, we don't see ourselves as a city. We see ourselves as a region, and we've taken it even into New Mexico. And I thought, what a great way to think of it. And I see that kind of is what I see with UMC.
100%. UMC, it's grown over the years. We will receive around 9,400 transfers this year from communities. And here's the deal. And Dr. Griswold told me this, who was our former chair of Burns Center for 30 years. Our catchment area for certain services for Lubbock, Texas, for UMC, is roughly the size of the country of France. Now, that means I'm getting patients from Oklahoma, southern Colorado, all of West Texas, practically two-thirds of New Mexico, and then down even into a bit of the valley. Because if you're the only level one trauma between Dallas and Albuquerque, and if you're the only burn center between Dallas and Phoenix, well, then when something happens and there are many patients that have been injured, whether it's oil field or agricultural or whatever, they're looking for a bed.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get patients from all over the region. And when I'm out visiting with smaller hospitals, their CEOs, whether it's New Mexico or Texas or whatever, and we get patients from 50 to 60 different hospitals, what they want to know is, can I get in?
Yeah.
Can I depend on you?
Mm-hmm.
Is it easy to get in? And when I'm filling up on certain days and I have to deny transfers and they have to go somewhere else because I don't have enough beds because the Lubbock's growing, right?
Yes, right.
And so as those things are happening, we are, we're very much trying to be as efficient as possible so we can say yes more often.
Yeah.
But it's a big catchment area.
Mm-hmm.
The Cancer Center, as an example, which just opened, you know, two weeks ago, they will receive patients from all over the region because where else are you going to go if you need cancer care?
Yeah, exactly.
It's very hard to deliver that type of care in a small community.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people ask me sometimes, why does Lubbock get such large amounts of health care? Well, why does Lubbock get large amounts of people coming to shop here and to eat here and to enjoy? This is a hub, right? It's a hub.
Yeah.
And so we are a medical hub as well as a economic hub. And I'll tell you something interesting. We just did a study by the Perryman Group in Waco. And that's an economic analysis group. Okay. Ray Perryman. He does this all over the state. He works for tech, and he does a lot of analysis.
Okay.
And he said that Lubbock, UMC specifically, the operations of UMC contribute right at $1.3 billion to the economy of Lubbock.
I can believe that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you think about, and then about 12,000 jobs. Well, that, I don't have 12,000 employees, but I'm using employees who work elsewhere to support UMC and to support our patients. Mm-hmm. So the long arms of a big organization reach quite far.
Yeah.
And
oh,
so
interesting.
We're looking at that, and it's rather extraordinary how many small communities depend on Lubbock.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And we want them to, frankly, we want them to do as much health care in their community as
possible. That's possible.
Mm-hmm. Do as much as you can, and then you come to Lubbock. Because, man, oh, man, if a small community loses its health care, especially those that are really close to Lubbock, if they lose that, then you really lose a great sense of your prosperity.
Right. No, it's so true. What advice do you have for a community like that
that's
got a hospital and they're struggling?
That's right. My advice first is to the individuals who live there, seek and find a primary provider, whether it be an MD, a DO, or a nurse practitioner.
Right.
You find one that you can relate to and let them be your source. You don't have to come to Lubbock for those types of things. You can let them be your source of referral. They'll determine where you need to go.
Right.
Let them be your prescription authority. Let them be the provider of care for your family. Mm-hmm. You don't have to come to Lubbock just because, well, I don't know them or I don't trust them. Find somebody in your community and build up those local providers. They want to do the work. And they're living in your town for a reason, right? And so we want that. Secondly, any way possible, you can support your local hospital, whether it's Brownfield, Denver City, Clovis, wherever it is, any way possible, you can do that as a local business. They need it. Mm-hmm. They need it. They don't have perhaps all the resources naturally that a larger hospital can perhaps just not have, but some of the just a little bit of comfort room we have when we go through a difficulty like COVID or a ransomware attack.
Right.
We have some reserves set aside, not a great deal, but we have
resilience.
More resilience.
Right.
And so I really think supporting the local providers in a smaller town, is just incredibly important.
So, you know, my fourth child, my fourth C-section, was born in Seminole.
Okay.
And we chose there because we had no insurance. And at that time, he's in his late 20s.
Okay.
And so nobody, at that time, nobody knew what to do with people that were cash pay.
That's right.
And you couldn't, just tell us how much is it going to be. No one could say.
Yeah, that's right.
But Seminole could say.
Yes.
And we could afford that.
Yes.
And so we were able to, and there was no nursery.
Right.
He stayed at the nurse's station, you know, but the doctor that delivered him was by far and away my favorite doctor.
Absolutely.
And he got there because Seminole paid his medical school
schooling
in exchange for him to come. And I don't know if he's still there or not, but he was happy in raising his kids there at that time. You know, and I mean, it was such a good experience. Here's my cell phone. And in fact, I saw a note one day, he said, the next time you do not give one of my patients my cell phone number when they call, I'm going to fire you.
Oh, wow.
It was like, you're in big trouble.
He's loyal to the community.
Very much so.
Well, here's a great story about that. So I'm going to Seminole tomorrow.
Okay.
We go out and do rounds on the communities that we serve, and I'm going to see them tomorrow. And there's a lot of business in Seminole.
Oh, yeah.
And here's an example for you. So a newborn baby is born in Seminole, and perhaps they need neonatal intensive care unit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the nurses in those communities have to know how to handle those babies before they can get here to a neonatal intensive care unit.
Yeah.
So we have training. We go out to the communities, and we are training nurses on high-risk pregnancy, on neonatal care.
Oh, that's
and
great.
They don't pay for this. We just go out and do it. We train on burn and trauma, because when they arrive in those small communities, is it an hour? Is it 2 hours? How fast can you get to where you need to go? And which doctor has to make that determination?
Oh my goodness.
And so we are out in the communities all the time doing all kind of training with a specialty trained individuals, right?
Yes.
And
yes.
So they're doing that. And one of the best ways we're doing training right now, which I think is a wonderful thing, is our EMS here in Lubbock. Our EMS does stop the bleeding training in schools all over the community.
Schools
are required to have a plan, and we don't really charge for it, but they're, and it's still an unfortunate, sad thing we have to talk about this.
I know.
But they are in schools, and they are making sure that teachers at least have the basic information on what they might need, as a preparatory event.
Yeah, I mean, those kids are doing those active shooter drills.
Absolutely.
Too. Yeah.
But the small communities depend on us, and we talk to them to find out, what do you need? What kind of training would you need to help you keep what you got, be prepared, and then send to us when you need to? That's really the goal we have.
Right. That's so, I love that. That's, in anything that people can do to stay home. I know in Brownfield, just when people were older and going through the dying process, to have a place for them.
Right.
The family didn't have to come.
That's right.
And go to Lubbock.
That's right.
And I mean, there's, and also hospice, of course, can be part of that process.
Of course.
Know that I've seen that several times, where not just their family, but people that they've known their entire lives.
That's right.
Can come.
That's right.
And say goodbye.
That's right. It's what's needed, and it's appropriate closure, and it brings community stronger and together, and all those things that you want in a smaller area.
Yeah. Well, it is a huge region, and I don't think I even realized how far for you guys the region goes.
Right. And that's really because you've got things that simply aren't that common. Mm-hmm. There's not that many burn centers in the country. So if you're going to invest in a burn center, burn surgeons, burn intensivists, burn ORs, all those things you have to have, you just can't do those in every city, right?
Right.
And so you're going to,
those are going to be somewhat infrequent. Kind of like those kind of things. So you have a cancer center now, you have the burn center. Like, I don't think I realized that was like so unique.
Probably the things that are most known about UMC over the years, goodness, all the way back almost the beginning. So, of course, we have EMS, right? And so that serves the entire county. Mm-hmm. We're one of the very, very, very few hospitals actually owns their own EMS.
Well, let me, story.
Yes.
I had an allergic reaction like maybe almost 2 years ago. Went into anaphylactic shock. And I would have died without the EMS. And not only that, I got a bill I could pay for without insurance.
Yes.
I got a bill I could afford and was like, I'm happy to pay this bill because it makes sense to me that this is what it should cost.
Yes.
And I didn't want to cry to think about it because I'm just, really grateful,
Sure.
Not just that the service was there and so they knew what they were doing.
They are so brilliant. They're one of only like 48 ambulance services in the world that are doubly designated and certified for both the person doing the work at the home where you were doing the actual paramedic work, and then also the person at the dispatch who's taking all the phone calls every day determining where to send the ambulances.
Oh, wow.
My own wife had an accident at home about 3 years ago, and I saw EMS in action in my living room.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an amazing thing. They do a great work. They were 50 years old last year. They started 2 years before the hospital even opened.
Oh, wow.
But they're also, it's totally funded by UMC. Most cities, Dallas, El Paso, Austin, EMS is paid for by some municipality.
Right. No, that's what surprised me.
And it's funded
100%
by UMC, and we pay the loss on it. But they are, they just do a remarkable, remarkable job.
Yeah.
I just can't say enough about them. So beyond EMS, you've got level 1 trauma, and that's, of course, there are limited of those around the country. And that means we would handle and be referred the most complex, difficult trauma cases, right? Okay. You hear that on the news, et cetera. Right. What right. comes to yes. us, what oil field accidents, what injuries, right. et cetera. Right. And then level one burn, mm-hmm. that defines UMC. Beyond those three, wow. Yes, there's a brand new cancer center. We have a very highly rated neonatal intensive care, ORs, et cetera. So there's many great things, but the things that probably have defined UMC the most over the years would be burn, level one trauma, and now cancer, and of course children's, yeah. the children's hospital.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing. So looking down the road, what do you see? What do you think we need to be looking at and investing in and
well,
thinking about?
That's a wonderful, wonderful question. I believe... You mentioned something a minute ago, how Amarillo kind of visions themselves. I don't think Lubbock sees themselves mm-hmm. as the size of city they are. Mm-mm. I think there is a mm-hmm. great ownership and pride in Lubbock that we're going to do this ourselves, and we're going to make sure this happens, and we're going to have as least amount of taxes as possible, yeah. and that all mm-hmm. sounds wonderful. But we're going to hit 500,000 people in yes. a matter of years.
Yes.
And I have got to have... I've got to have a larger footprint. I've yeah. got to have more ER beds, more urgent care beds, and those are working fantastically. I've got to have more hospital beds. And so I'm going to be visiting with my county commissioners mm-hmm. about, okay, what are we going to invest in mm-hmm. to make sure Lubbock is ready mm-hmm. for growth and not yes. it approaches us by surprise and all of a sudden, well, why are we having to send patients away? I'm already sending some patients away. And mm-hmm. so we've got to be very, very strongly aligned on the cost of investment, mm-hmm. regardless of whether that increases the tax rate or not. Right. What is the cost yes. of being ready so our children right. and their children have hospital health care at yes. the ready
right.
when they need it?
Yes. You know, so I've been doing a deep dive into the budget just
oh, okay.
out of curiosity because... you know, you hear things, and I'm like, but is it actually true? You know, people yes. are mad because this happened.
Or sure.
This is this, and we, you know. And so I just thought, I probably need to figure this out for myself if this is actually true. And, yeah, there are some weirdness. I will say that.
Well,
but, like, at the same time, I'm like, we have a tendency to think that being a conservative – means that we never spend money.
Yes, ma'am.
And the fact is that actually lends us to a situation like where we are with our water.
That's right.
We have not been thoughtful in where should this money be going. And, like, honestly, I saw someone complaining about their water bill in Amarillo on Facebook the other day, and I was like, you know, the time of cheap water, almost free water, is quickly coming
yes,
to an end.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
And, you know, I know that my brother pays a lot in Wolfworth for his water. You know, it's
yes.
probably double what it is in Lubbock. Well, that's going to be the reality for most of us, you know. And the fact is that you are serving, you know, people that are like us that don't carry insurance.
Right.
Or... people that, you know, are falling in the cracks and they can't, or
right.
you're not actually getting reimbursed for the actual cost
no,
of your
not.
Services because of the cuts on a national level. And so I know that there's ongoing issues, and I hope that we in this region don't cut off our nose to spite our face. You know what I mean?
Sure. I know what you mean. I don't think the intent of having minimal tax is a bad intent.
Right.
Nobody wants
no.
to spend money foolishly
right. yeah.
At all. But growth is growth.
Mm-hmm.
And when Lubbock grows, we've got to be ready. Mm-hmm. We've got to be prepared for the needs of our community.
You know, also, I think it's, you know, what kind of growth do we want? Because I know if you look at economic development, those small businesses are the things that really... are the things that invest the most. I
yes.
mean, they matter the most to our communities. And I see a lot of times, you know, places are like growth at any cost.
Right.
And that's not, and I do appreciate, I read an article about the data centers and how they're looking at them and they're being more strategic and not going, come, we don't care.
Right.
Just come.
Right.
You know, there's none of that. And I really appreciate that.
There's something that I want to mention to you. And I do talk about this to small businesses, especially if you're a small business in Lubbock and you are, let's say you have insurance for your employees, but it's self-funded.
Yeah.
You don't have a plan. You just pay for it yourself. Mm-hmm. And so we have done something in the last, about 3 years that I think has just been pretty remarkable, and I'm just really blessed by it. We opened up Lubbock's first 24/7 urgent care clinics. Now, when I say that, what I mean is the ER is a busy place.
Yes.
And you could wait hours and hours in any busy ER.
Right.
However, about 60% of people who are in the ER today are not emergent.
Right.
But they're hurting,
mm-hmm.
and they're distressed, and they don't know where to go.
Right.
And they don't have insurance, or they don't have a doctor, or it's 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday morning, mm-hmm. right? And so the urgent care clinics were built to offload the non-emergent business. Well, we've built two of them now, and they're going to see 80,000 people this year.
Oh, my goodness.
80,000 people. Because, number one, the wait time is around 57 minutes on average.
Yep.
It's far cheaper than the cheapest bill in any ER.
Right.
And it's available. And it's accessible. Right. There's one by the hospital, and there's one out in the Southwest. And I'm saying that because we added up. What does this mean, then, to the consumer, perhaps somebody who owns a business? Well, the savings we calculated to be around $15 million a year to either self-funded payment plans or to patients. It's $15 million cheaper to do that versus to go to an expensive ER for non-emergent care.
Right.
And so when you start trying to put things in that perspective, you are in fact helping a small business. You're helping somebody that perhaps obviously is going to have an emergent need at some point, but perhaps they won't have to do a full ER visit if it's not perhaps at that level. So there's some things, you know, between that and between EMS and between not having any tax increase, we've been at the no new revenue rate for 13 of the last 16 years.
Oh my goodness.
So
we
have tried to be, well, frankly, we have been gratefully very good stewards of the dollars we receive. We receive around $36 million in taxes and our unfunded bill, if I can call it that, unfunded, those that we are absorbing the cost of their care because there's no resources there, is about $106 million. And so you've got to be really innovative.
Now, wait a second. Please go back and say that again.
Okay. So the taxes we receive are around $36
That's
million.
That's what I thought you were saying. I thought maybe you meant $360 million. $36 million.
And the cost of care for unfunded individuals, who is our mission, right?
Right.
Is about $106 million. Now, the reason for that, we're conservative, Lubbock's conservative, we've been in the habit of this for quite some time. My budget is around $1 billion to run the entire organization, almost 6,000 employees, 800 doctors, et cetera. We have great partners with Texas Tech, but that's my budget, $1 billion. Only 3.7% of my budget comes from taxes. Not even 4%. So if I compare myself in Lubbock, this community that we love, if I compare Lubbock to every other public hospital, Midland, Odessa, Dallas, Fort Worth, San Antonio, Houston, the average in those communities is almost 22%. I'm at 3.7, they're at 22. So we are grateful for every dollar we get, but it's not what I would call particularly sustainable into the future as inflation and the cost of care and the cost and the aging of America happens. We are going to need more public support from our commissioner's court. And we're having those conversations because 3.7% simply is, it's admirable, but I can't say it's particularly sustainable.
And I always think there's got to be, you know, you look at the hotel tax for people that come in. You know, that's not much people are paying. It adds up.
It does add up.
It adds up. You know, and I always think about that in terms of like, how do we add, you know, how do we value those pennies, you know what I mean, that can add up over the years, you know what I mean?
Because it's the multiplier effect
of
those dollars you receive this year into the coming years, right? And so that's why, even if it's a moderate or small amount, it helps you grow for the future. Because you don't know what the next pandemic will do to you, or perhaps the next outbreak, or whatever the case is.
Well, and also, you guys need to be investing, too, in like things that, or the community should be investing in things that are preventative.
Absolutely.
That show that, you know, we spend a lot of money on, of course, police and a lot more than most cities our size. And it's still, we're still like half staff for police force, you know? And so, but I'm like, well, are there things that we're doing that could be preventing some crime?
Right.
You know, that are there ways that we can invest in areas that are proven to work?
So some of the things we're doing right now, and I'm really so pleased about this, we have a care coordination group that does nothing but, these are RNs, they are working with patients who are perhaps new to diabetes. Okay, my life is changing. I've been diagnosed. How do I grapple with this? How do I change my life, my diet, my lifestyle when I have a family at home? And so they are working with them and training them, and they're going to classes, and we are seeing folks gratefully come out of the class with a better A1C, and they're lowering their need for medication, and they're lowering their weight and that kind of thing. And so now you're having to get in front of people and be compelling, and they're having to see a need for it, but it's actually happening.
Yeah,
and we're
seeing
some real improvement with diabetic patients, both adults and pediatrics. And those are just programs that we implemented, because if you don't, they're going to come in my hospital anyway.
That's exactly
And so
that.
Why not help them now in those regards?
Yes.
And that same thing is happening with, one of the biggest areas in the cancer center, of course, is women's breast cancer. Yeah. And so we're trying to work with
more mammograms.
Ladies who are working who can't get away to get a mammogram. So we have these at night now, and they're called Ladies Night Out. And we have these throughout the year, and you make an appointment, and you can do it at night instead of having it during the day. So this is something we started a couple of years ago, and it's worked out very well for us.
There's so many things that you're doing that is what a brilliant idea. Super exciting. How do people know all these cool things?
I know. We don't advertise it as much as we should, most likely, because we're just, we're just doing it. But you're exactly right. We do quite a bit on social media now, quite a bit now than we ever did in the past.
So you're on Facebook and Instagram
and
all the things.
We're pushing a lot of that.
Is it just basically UMC Hospital, or are you broken into different departments?
No, it's pretty much just UMC Hospital.
That helps.
Within that, you'll find the children's, and you'll find the other programs and the classes and that kind of thing. Yeah. You'll find the cancer center. That's one way to get it out. And then we do meet, like I'm visiting with two different businesses today at lunch. We're out in the community quite a bit, just talking about, here's what we offer. If you know somebody, for instance, last week out at Health and Wellness on Slide Road, we had three physicians, all ladies, talking about women's health. And it was free. And they're in the building. And there's about 150 people there. Yeah. And we advertise that as well.
Right.
And they're just hearing about women's health and infertility and menopause and the things that really they are wondering, what about medications, et cetera.
Yeah, this is something that really just now people are
absolutely
starting to talk about.
So we're trying to really use that building, use the talent we have. The doctors are willing. Yeah. We've got to be more vigilant about being
now,
vocal.
Is this the 114th
yes,
in
ma'am.
Slide?
Yes, ma'am. The new hospital out on...
My parents live right out there. That is a fantastic place.
We are very grateful
and
for that place.
And we had an issue, needed to get in. Like, we were in within, less than 24 hours. We had an appointment.
The ER, the physicians there, the urgent care clinic behind it.
Also,
it's just a
beautiful lobby.
It's growing.
And you walk in and you don't feel immediately stressed.
Right. I'll tell you something, a couple of things, because people ask me questions all the time about this. Number one, we paid for that entire building with cash reserves. No debt, no tax.
Oh my gosh.
We've been saving for a way to expand.
Yeah.
Now, my hospital is kind of landlocked. We're downtown, mm-hmm. you know, by Tech, and it's a big building.
Right.
But we're trying to push a lot of business out to that
one
so we can take on more business mm-hmm. where we are, right? And then thirdly, that's a lovely area. It's a lovely building. Every dollar we make out there helps pay for that gap I just talked about, the $36 million versus the $106. That
nice.
Helps pay for it.
That's
and
nice.
So that's a piece of the strategy.
Yes.
It's not just helping Southwest Lubbock. It's helping us take care of those that
right.
are vulnerable
right.
On the
right.
main campus.
Right.
So that building's worked out great for us. It really is about wellness, and they're doing a wonderful job.
Well, you know, I think it's pretty obvious that this isn't just a, I'm going to make these decisions with my heart.
Right.
And it's also not, I'm going to make these decisions just with my logic.
Yes, ma'am.
But you have found a way to really take those two things and combine them so well.
We appreciate that. We have a great team. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I'm so blessed with the vice presidents and the people that I have working and the doctors we have
yeah.
there. And you're right. We want to have a good strategy for the yeah. next 10 years for Lubbock. And then we also want to do it, though, with the same service-minded culture.
Yes.
Because that
yep.
attracts people.
I'm sorry. Didn't expect this to be such a just a, you know, I'm just overwhelmed.
The culture is
gratitude.
Everything. It really
yeah.
is everything.
Yeah.
And people feel that when they come there.
Yeah.
And I'm just so grateful. That's something we've worked on for a long time, having a culture of service, not just to our patients, but to each other.
Yeah.
Especially now
yeah.
in this post-COVID yeah. world we live in.
Yeah.
So we have plans for the future, and we're going to need the public's support.
Yes.
And we're
going
to be
yeah.
coming to our county court for their deliberation. And we're excited about what's coming with Lubbock. Absolutely.
I know it is really going to change over the next few years. And you know, something that I'd been reading a couple of different books on economic development, you know, and, you know, city growth and investment.
Right.
Also, and one of the books I've been reading is called Put Your Money Where You Live.
Okay.
And this guy's argument is for people to spend less money investing on Wall Street.
Right.
And spend more
right.
time investing. It's harder to do.
Right.
But and the rate of returns are about the same, except that there's this part that can't be quantified,
that's
which
correct.
Is your schools and your streets
that's
and
correct.
Hospital.
Safety and a sense of safety.
Yes. Yeah.
And dependence
yes.
on your local
right.
providers.
And
absolutely.
I recently met with a guy that actually has spent several years doing that here in the community. I had no clue. And he mentioned several things that he and a group of investors had
okay.
invested in and, you know, that have been beneficial to the community. And I just, you know, I think that's something else that we just as, you know, people that are middle class, upper class, that are looking
right.
at our retirement,
right.
they're looking at investment things. It's a wise idea to think, what are businesses that have been here and they've been healthy and they want to
yes.
expand
yes.
and that's a great place to put my business,
that's
you know.
Right. And that same thing would be applicable to philanthropy.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
it's just
yes.
where your heart is, where your dollars are, where you want your life to be.
Yes.
People have been
exactly.
very, very generous,
yeah.
Not just in Lubbock, but beyond Lubbock, to UMC, to Children's Miracle Network. And we depend on that.
Yeah, you know, and that's something
absolutely.
I was talking about yesterday with some of partners from another couple of other nonprofits that they were saying, you know, it's a really difficult time right now for organizations that have depended on
yes.
grants. And
yes.
so I know recently I was at a really important facility in Texas, and they lost 6 grants.
Wow.
And, you know, the director spent the entire year just going around trying to, what do we do? And he's
right.
like, no one cares about us out here.
Right.
You know, but what these two nonprofits are saying is what they're seeing is that the private side, like even the corporate side, you know, a lot of those corporations, they're not feeling the pressure from the United States anymore
right.
on what we used to call ESGs, environmental,
yes.
social governance.
Yes.
But they're feeling that pressure. They're global organizations, and they're feeling that pressure from other places. That pressure is not going to go away.
Right, right.
It's going to stay. And finding ways to partner to give them the stories that they need and the outcomes that they need. That is going to be that's really been part of the goal of this organization, is how do we find those people and then bring the value of our region to their attention.
You know, a story, oh my goodness, a story has such power.
Yes.
A well-placed, well-articulated story about the need, right?
Yes.
And then about how you get there and what the outcome has been. We have used stories for years, and it just turns perhaps a possible to a yes, because the need is so compelling and people's hearts are moved, right?
Yes, yeah.
And so having a great story about the need and how what conservation means to you and to the community, it just makes a difference.
It
really has long arms to it, perhaps the like of which we'll never know, you know, this side of heaven.
No, I think that's very true. I mean, you know, the things that we talk about, you know, that we're investing in, we've had some people say, we don't do Ply Lakes because it won't have any impact now. And I'm like, since when should that be our goal?
Right.
You know?
Just today.
Like, if it doesn't help today, then it doesn't have value.
Right.
You know? And so we really have to set, I think, as our generation, the kids that are coming up, the young ones that are coming up behind us, my kids are saying, where do I see you reflecting my values? You know, and that has been a challenge to me. It's really one of the things that has driven me more into conservation and the awareness of the needs around me is my kids challenging me.
Yeah.
And they see those needs and they're pointing them out and they matter to them.
And they see the fractured world they live in. And so looking for permanence, right?
It's so
they're looking
true.
For stability and permanence, whether it's in life or faith.
Yes.
Or whatever the case is, they want permanence. Yeah. They want something they can depend on.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. This has been so good.
Oh, I'm glad. I've enjoyed it.
It's been great.
I've enjoyed it very much.
Thank you so much for taking the time to be
You're
here.
Welcome.
And visiting with us.
You're welcome.
I hope that you'll come back.
I shall.
Okay. All right. Well, friends, thanks for joining us on this kind of emotional for me journey as I learned more about just the heart of UMC. I think that's important. That's important. And I hope that everybody listening to us is really from this region. And so that you have learned more about the value that they bring and what the goal is, which is service.
Right. Absolutely.
And, that matters a lot.
Absolutely.
It does. So hope that you will join us again on another episode of Conservation Stories. Thanks for listening.